Hey friends, before we dive into this episode, I just put together a brand new guide to help you start and build your web design business. For those of you who are early stagers, whether you're just starting or whether you're just having trouble getting your business off the ground, this free guide is a 10-step action plan that is a proven path to building your business successfully. We're going to cover things like what to offer and what services to provide your clients as a web designer, how to price those, and I'm even going to share some of my top tips for starting to get paying clients. I'm also going to share with you the things you need to know as a web designer to be able to charge accordingly. So you can pick up this free guide at joshhall.co/build. Again, it's a 10-step action plan. It is a proven path to starting your web design business successfully. It is definitely what I wish I had when I got started. So I'm really excited to share it with you. Pick it up today for completely free. joshhall.co/build. I'm excited to help you start and build your business.
Welcome to the Josh Hall Web Design Show. Web Design Show. Helping you build better websites and create a web design business that gives you freedom and a lifestyle you love.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into episode 63. So in this one, we're going to dive into video marketing, more specifically how you as web designers can use video to help grow your business. Video right now is king. There is just no better way to build trust, authority, and likability than utilizing video. And it's funny because I think I do more video and video editing than I do web designing these days, just between my podcast and then doing tutorials, course videos, training, and workshops, and little Loom videos to students and stuff. So obviously, I'm a big proponent of video. I've learned a lot about it. But I did a lot of video even as a solopreneur web designer as well. And you'll find out in this episode, there's a handful of areas where I really encourage that you do video as well. But the thing is, if you're a web designer, you probably didn't plan on doing a whole lot of video because you wanted to do web design. So in an effort to help you, I wanted to do an episode specifically with how you can get started with doing video and get more confident. And we're going to give you some tricks and tips in this episode. And for this episode, I've actually brought in an expert in the field. So I'm going to share what I know and what I've learned with video, but you're going to hear from an expert in the field. My colleague, David Kilkelly, runs a business called Remote Video Team, and they're actually some folks that I'm talking with about helping me moving forward. But he is just a guru with video. And in this episode, he dishes out so much good advice with, again, getting started, but then also talking about the technical side of things. And as you'll find out, you don't need a bunch of fancy equipment to do video. It can be as simple as your cell phone. I mean, you can do a lot with fancy cameras and lighting if you want, but you don't have to do it at that level. But there's going to be a lot of ways that's going to help you grow your business and make really good connection with your clients. And you're going to hear in this episode how to practically get started and how to get more comfortable in front of the camera. And I promise you guys, it's going to do wonders for you and your business. So stoked for you to hear this episode and to take away some practical things to apply to your business. Now, the video itself is very, very powerful. Where it can be even more powerful is on your website. And if you have video in combination with a really nice website design, you are gold, my friend. So I wanted to make sure, if you didn't already know, I have a website design course specifically guiding you through the most important aspects of conversion-based web design. And that course is available right now for you to join. I've got over, I think, 120 or 30 students who have been through it so far, and it's making incredible difference in everyone who's been through it. I've seen a lot of the designs coming from students recently, and I've been blown away, and I just love seeing these new designs in action and see how they're helping my students grow their own businesses and making beautiful websites. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, maybe if you struggle with having an eye for design, then this course is going to be perfect for you. And again, if you use really nice design techniques in combination with what you learned in this episode with video marketing, you are going to do some amazing conversion for you and your client's website. So check that out today if you're interested in joining. All right, guys, well, enjoy my interview with David Kilkelly about some really good video marketing tips for you and your business. And I did want to mention too, before we dive in, if you check out his website at remotevideoteam.com and you're interested in talking with them about getting some help with your videos, or if you're interested, they have some courses and some instructional stuff that can help you as well. If you use code Josh Hall, when you reach out to them, you'll get 10% off anything you choose. That's exclusively for Josh Hall Web Design Show podcast listeners. So code Josh Hall if you reach out to them. Without further ado, enjoy my interview with David and let's talk video marketing. David, great to have you on the podcast, man.
Josh, hi, how you doing? Thank you for inviting me on. It's great to be here.
This is the second time we're doing this intro because we had a little Wi-Fi difficulty there. So we're gonna redo this intro. But man, I'm stoked to have you on the podcast because I was on a podcast with my business coach, James Ramko, recently. And then he's a mutual friend and coach of ours. You were actually on his podcast as well. So I heard your episode. And then you reached out after I was on his podcast, and I was stoked to hear from you because I listened to your episode and I'm fascinated with video and video marketing, particularly how myself and my audience of web designers can use this to help grow our business. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with you about the ins and outs of video marketing and how, again, my audience of web designers can use this. So before we dive into it though, man, I'd love to hear and start off with where you are and then what you do.
Yeah, sure. So I'm based in the southwest of the UK, near a city called Exeter, a couple of hours from London. And for the last 5 or 6 years, we've run a video production agency. So quite a similar story to yours in that sense that we've been helping marketing agents and six and seven figure businesses to kind of create campaign content, high end kind of bespoke content for their websites and for their campaigns. And then more recently, we've kind of looked at how video is changing. So my background is actually in education. It goes way back beyond before we did the production company. I was working in education, teaching video production and content and media for about 10 years previous to that. And so there's always been a kind of a trend of education that's run through what we've done and what I've done. And then more recently, we've looked at how the market has changed, and we can talk about this, I suppose, in this podcast, and how people are now creating a lot of their own content. And so we've put together a new business called Remote Video Team, which is really to help coaches, entrepreneurs, people who are training through video and that kind of stuff to create that regular, consistent, ongoing content. And that might be kind of homemade content, or we might be helping them to do that through some courses and through some guides, but also doing some of the editing and even some of the filming if they need that as well.
Yeah. And that's why I was so pumped to talk with you about this, because there's so many variations of video. I mean, like I said, before we went live, we were talking about the fact that I'm really doing video more than anything right now, which is kind of why I'm interested in working with you and your guys' service here pretty soon. But even when I was a solo web designer, I still did quite a bit of video. And what I've found and what a lot of my students are doing now is, and I will say, I understand a lot of web designers are fearful of getting in front of the camera or doing video, but the fact is, video does wonders for your business, and it builds trust, it builds likability. And I have found that in my experience as a web designer, what a lot of my students are doing, we have kind of five areas of videos. We create short videos, typically with Loom or something like that, for like proposals or walkthroughs, or maybe a quick video to show a client something. We do tutorial videos often for like videos on the tools that we use for clients. I'm a big proponent of web designers doing webinars and training videos at any time to help, you know, create some leads and do any sort of training and building your network like that. And then there's like promotion videos for services on your website, but then also a whole different variety of social media videos we can do. So those are some of the areas that I did video in the past as a web designer, and that's what a lot of my folks are doing. So I'm really excited to talk about the nitty-gritty with all these. I think a great place to start though would be why. Why video? Like, why are you a big proponent of video for any industry?
So I suppose, I mean, okay, so if you look back at you know, the way that people have advertised in the past. So if you go back 20, 30 years to when we only really had TV, we didn't have the internet and that kind of stuff. So, you know, back then, the most popular, you know, the most successful and obviously the most expensive type of advertising was adverts and TV. It's visual, it's engaging, it's emotive. We all, you know, feed with our eyes. So we remember stuff that's visual. When you combine it with music and all these different elements, you can create something that kind of taps the emotions, and people, as we know through kind of sales and stuff, that people buy with emotions rather than really with intellect a lot of the time. So, you know, in terms of the kind of advertising and that kind of old school stuff, then that's you know, that's that way of looking at it, I suppose. That's obviously a very, you know, popular way of kind of connecting with people. But more recently, I think the since we've had the internet, really, the video is the thing that brings the internet alive. So there are a lot of businesses now, like yours and mine, and a lot of the people you probably work with, who are working pretty much entirely through the internet. They're working remotely. They're working with clients in different countries. Quite a lot of the time, just through, you know, through a web connection. And really, what video does is it enables that to become a much more personal relationship. Because without that, you've all you've got is email or messages or some kind of text-based thing on your website. And really, you know, in terms of fluidity and character and personality, you're not conveying very much to those kind of traditional things. So video is a thing that really has kind of woken up the internet. And it's only really been since we've had decent internet connections, but also things like social media and some of the kind of web tools and video tools like Zoom and stuff that we suddenly now find ourselves using it all the time. And, you know, that's I think it's very powerful, like you said.
It is, isn't it? Like, it really just builds. I'm big on people, and one way to get clients is for them to know, like, and trust you. And I feel like video really brings all those three together. Because as you said, like in an email, you can get somebody's tone and you can get somebody's, you know, a feel for their personality a little bit. The next best step is to see an image or a picture of them, but nothing beats seeing them on video because you really get a sense of somebody. And I think that's absolutely crucial. And one thing I will say too, like I mentioned in the outset, a lot of web designers are fearful of getting in front of the camera. But what helped me, because I was too, I've really worked hard at communicating and getting better on camera. A few years back, this was not the case. I was, as soon as I had a light on me and a camera on me, I would turn into somebody completely different. So I had to really work on that. I'm sure we'll talk about that here too. But I say that to say, that's okay. Like if you're feeling scared to get on camera, that's all right. You can really work at it. And the really cool thing now is that, like you mentioned, half of the videos on social media are with phones now. So it's a lot less intimidating than going to a studio with big lights and a sound studio. So I just feel like, I guess that's my next question for you, David, is like, what are some of the things that you've seen that have helped people get past that fear and getting better on camera?
Well, I think you nailed it just a second ago, and it's basically just practice, and it's exposing yourself to something regularly enough. And I think one of the problems that people have with video is they put up big barriers for themselves in the sense that they think that once they film something, they then have to put it on social media. They have to broadcast it out to like thousands of people. It's going to be on the World Wide Web and everyone's going to see it. Well, firstly, you don't have to publish your first couple of videos. You can stick them on your hard drive and just watch them and kind of give yourself some feedback. You can find a small Facebook group or a private group or something to post to. So you're just kind of keeping those numbers down a little bit. That makes it less intimidating. You know, when we run kind of little courses and training and things like that, we usually set up a little private group or something somewhere that people can post video content so that they can just kind of practice a little bit.
Oh, that's great.
But then the other thing is just, you know, you don't get success in anything unless you step outside of your comfort zone a little bit. So, you know, every day, you know, every time you've started a new job, you know, those first couple of days are tough, you know, but you kind of have to throw yourself into it. Otherwise you don't have a job. But if you, you know, set up a new business, then it's going to be difficult. If you start anything that you start that's new is going to be a little bit uncomfortable. And that's okay. I think, you know, fear is one of those things that you should kind of embrace because it means that you're separating yourself from other people. If it was really easy to do, then everyone would do it. So if you can see fear as a sort of actually a way of, you know, maybe putting your head up above the pit a little bit and kind of, you know, doing something that other people aren't doing, then that gives you an advantage and that's going to be really good for your business.
Well said, David. That's great. I am totally on board with that. And particularly in the space of web design, if you are doing videos for your clients or promotions or things like that and doing short videos on social media, you will stand apart from other web designers. I feel like video is much more common if you're in the entrepreneurial world of like Realty or something else where you're like, you know, if you're a motivator or a coach, you're probably naturally more comfortable on camera. Web designers are designers for a reason. You want to do something creative and sit behind a screen. But if you do want to set yourself apart, video is just the best way to do it. And again, it's just the quickest. I found that it's the quickest ROI, return on investment, because again, it goes back to clients getting to know, like, and trust you very quickly. And I know one thing that helped me in the early days of experimenting with doing more video was I found myself very comfortable meeting with clients one-on-one and in small groups. But again, terrified in front of a camera, stuttering over myself. Once that light turned on, again, I just turned into somebody completely different. But what I realized was, you know what? What I do with one person, I could, you know, get better on camera and then do it one to many with a camera. So instead of meeting with clients one-on-one, showing them how to use Google Analytics, what I did was just a tutorial video on how to use analytics. And I did some basic videos like that that really helped build the confidence. So for me, it was the same thing, step by step, just getting more confident, getting, you know, just doing it over and over. And in the early days, that helped me. And again, it really just, it opened my eyes to a whole new world of marketing, because I didn't need to do ads. I didn't need to do all the typical sales routes. All I did was just post content of myself being helpful. And that was it. That was kind of the game changer for me. So yeah, that makes total sense. Just repetition, just doing it, getting out of your comfort zone. Now I'm curious, because like I mentioned, I've seen a few different categories that most web designers are doing video. What would you say would be the easiest starting point? Would it be like a tutorial video showing what you know? Because I feel like as long as you're just sharing what you know, it takes a lot of the pressure off. Or would you recommend like short videos, like social media videos with your phone? What would you recommend for folks just starting out getting into video?
I suppose, I mean, it's different maybe for every different kind of business. And you know, it's kind of, there's not really a set rule. I suppose if you weren't comfortable about being on camera, then tutorial videos, particularly if you're talking about software and stuff, are quite good, because you could do a really quick 5-second intro to camera. And then you could just have your screen capture up for your software or something like that. And you could walk through different kind of software things. So that's maybe one way of kind of introducing yourself easily, so that you don't feel like you have to be on camera all the time through the video. Because then really what you're just doing is just leaning on your voice, which is a value in itself. So when I first started teaching, for example, I remember specifically when I first went into that room that, you know, I was shaking and I had to have notes and I had to keep looking at them. And I was never kind of very sort of, you know, confident in that space, even with just a small group of people. And then 5 or 10 years later, I could go in there and I could do it without any notes off the top of my head. And I felt completely comfortable. So, and one of the skills I learned in that time was being able to talk and think at the same time. And I think that's one of the things that's quite difficult when people are doing video. So because they're trying to concentrate on what they're saying, but they're also trying to concentrate on thinking at the same time. So you kind of, it's a bit of a duality, which does take a little bit of practice. So being prepared is probably really good. So making sure you've got some good notes there, and then maybe you've read through them a few times, you've practiced it a little bit. It just means that you're going to be able to speak a little bit more fluently without having to concentrate on what you're saying too much. Mostly when we have a conversation, we don't think about what we're saying. We just kind of open our mouth and it comes out fairly naturally. But as soon as you add that layer of concentration, it becomes a little bit more tricky. So being prepared is really, really good in that situation.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. I just had a flashback to when I started doing video, I did the same thing. I did mainly just audio. I did screencasts for like the tutorials that I would show clients, or walkthroughs with Loom. I would typically not have the camera on. And as soon as I had the camera on, it did. It brought in that whole new element of like, now I'm not only thinking about the content, but I'm thinking about how I'm looking, how am I coming across, like, you know, is the lighting okay? So it did bring a whole other element. So yeah, I would back that up and say, start as simple as you can, particularly for web designers. One of the best places to start is to do those tutorial videos or just quick little walkthroughs on the tools you use or things that you can help your clients with. And even if you're doing like Loom and you're overviewing a proposal or something like that, you don't necessarily have to turn your camera on. You can always just do it with just your voice, and that will take a lot of pressure off. But if you add in the camera and they see you, that will add a whole nother level of trust for sure. And that's where I think potentially doing like short videos would be the good next step. Would you agree with that? Like maybe even if it's just on your phone, just, you know, doing quick social media videos or stuff like that. Because if somebody brand new to video wants to do an hour webinar, it's a lot of pressure with the camera on. You're going to have some good notes. That's a whole different ballgame than just doing a non-video tutorial or even just a short video, social media video.
Yeah, sure. And I think, I mean, you sent me a clip that you'd done recently, which was literally just one take to camera. I suppose, and as long as you keep those short, there's a tendency, I suppose, sometimes, and I see this quite regularly, actually, to kind of get lost in those kind of one takes, so that minute that it should be turns into three or four, and you're kind of waffling a little bit, and then then people don't edit it. And sometimes that means that you've got something that should be punchy, but has become a little bit kind of inflated. So if you're going to do those little one-take social videos, you want to really think about just one idea, one quick thing. Keep it pretty brief as much as you can, so that you don't get lost in the middle of it. And then, of course, the advantage of that is that if you fluff it up, you can literally just do another one. And it's just another 30 seconds that you're trying to do, sort of thing. And, you know, even when I do created social media content, you know, edited social media videos for LinkedIn and that kind of thing, you know, I still repeat sometimes. I'll repeat a line four or five times until I get it right. And then I know that I can piece those together in the edit suite. So there is a power of being able to, there's actually less pressure on your shoulders if you're happy and confident enough to edit it, because it means you're only needing to really grab small bits that you're happy with. You don't have to do the whole thing in one go.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like with video, that's the beauty about it. Unless you're doing something live, which is pretty rare, you can just edit it or you can just start over. I can't tell you how many times typically when I do an introduction to my podcast, which I record separately from the conversations, I generally do the very first line 3 to 4 times at least, because I'm either stumbling through it or by the third or fourth time, I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to say. I got it. And that's what I roll with. Then I usually build the momentum and I'm good from there. But same thing with short videos. That video that you saw, David, of one of my, it was just a short video where I just promoted a podcast. I just said I forget what I said, maybe just one point or one tip from the episode. And I recommended checking it out. That was probably the third version of that video. I probably did a 5 to 6 minute version. And then I was like, that it was fluffy. There was too much. I liked how you guys in the UK say too much waffle or whatever. It was just too much. So I just condensed it. But the cool thing about that is if you get your practice run out, you generally get all the bad stuff and the fluff out, and then you kind of know what your main points are. So I would just back that up. And hopefully that's an encouragement to everybody to say, if you record something, it's not set in stone. You could try it out. And then if you want to tighten it up, then re-record it or edit it and do those little quick cuts, because there are, this is the next good question for you, I think. And this is totally a selfish question, because I'm getting pretty good at doing 10 to 20, 30 minute podcast episodes or videos, tutorials all the way through without having too much fluff. But that's only because I've been doing courses and videos for several years every day now. Now, in the early days, I was much more long, too long form to where it wasn't condensed. There was a lot of fluff. There was a lot of ramble. And I did edit that out. How do you feel? I mean, I guess it would depend on the type of content you're doing. But, I mean, we shouldn't be afraid of editing, right? Like those quick cuts. I mean, is somebody going to care if your face is here and then it's obvious there was a cut and then now it's over here? You know what I mean? Is that something you find that deters people now, or is that just to be expected to keep it tighter?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, certainly for the kind of video that we're talking about, so social media content, the kind of quick kind of mobile phone stuff, nobody's really looking at whether you've got a, particular visual aesthetic or whether you're cutting. In fact, to be honest, those kind of quick cuts that where you just cut from yourself to yourself are pretty common these days, and you see them all over the place. And that's really just a byproduct of the technology and the ability to kind of use the technology as well. And I think that's absolutely fine. If we were producing a sort of high-end piece, like a promotional video or something like that, then we would think differently about that. There are different sort of techniques you can use to kind of change that up a little bit. That there's quite a clever, if you feel like you want to make it a little bit more polished, say for example, with course content, I think a lot of the time you've got to think about the shelf life of the content. So for social media content, we're really only expecting that content maybe to live for a few days or a week or two. Mm-hmm. YouTube's slightly different, and we can maybe talk about that in a bit. But for kind of Facebook and LinkedIn and this kind of stuff, most of that content should be quick and easy, because it's chewed up pretty quickly and then it's gone. So you don't want to spend too long giving it a high polish. course content that might be around for a while. You might be selling a course for a few years or something. You might want to spend a bit more time making that look nice. It doesn't have to be flashy. It doesn't have to have lots of kind of, you know, drone shots and things like that, but it just has to be kind of a little bit more tidy, I suppose. And one of the really clever little tricks that we use is to shoot in 4K, because it allows you to zoom into the picture in post-production and retain the quality. So if you shoot something in 1080 and then you zoom in, it goes a bit muffled. It goes a bit kind of soft because you're basically kind of zooming in post-production. But with a 4K video, you can use a what I call a crop cut in post-production, which means you can zoom in. So then you're cutting from a long shot to a close-up. And that just allows you to be able to jump in and out all the way through without actually changing the camera or changing the, you know, the setup or anything.
So
like
it kind of
so
looks like it kind of looks like two different cameras if there's different, like a close-up shot in the back, but it's just cropped differently. Yeah. I mean, for most web designers, we're going to have a webcam or something like that, which is fine too. But the same idea applies, just as far as, you know, if you crop a webcam, it's going to distort, but. I like the idea of, you know, there's just less pressure now. Like my course videos, I don't crop the camera necessarily. What I do, though, for those who have been through my courses, and some of my tutorials are like this too, is I'll just move my video to the side and I'll have like a sidebar with the points, and I'll just have the bullets echo what I'm saying. So I totally agree, man. And it's a good principle to think about with video, is just to remember. And maybe this is a good transition to talk about the different types of video for the different platforms, but typically social media videos are not going to have a long shelf life. Now they could, some people could visit them, you know, months or years down the road, but more than likely YouTube videos, training videos, and course videos in particular, those are what are going to be, you know, should be a little more polished, or at least a little more put together. And yeah, that's a next great question I think for you, David, is the different types of video for these different types of platforms. So Facebook and other social media versus YouTube versus LinkedIn. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, just with the different types of, particularly for social media outlets? Let's focus on the different social media. What kind of videos work best for the different types?
Yeah, sure. I suppose it's really important just to identify the difference between pretty much all social networks and YouTube. Like YouTube is not really a social network. It's got a social component to it in that there's comments and things, but it doesn't really work in the same way in that it's not a moving feed of content. So all social networks like Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, all work around people checking in, having a quick look through their feed, snacking on something or kind of consuming something because it's there, not really necessarily searching it out, not really kind of intentionally going to look for it, but you know, you follow a few things and then that's kind of quite interesting, and you'll check in and you'll watch a video when you're kind of checking in on your social media. YouTube, as I'm sure you know because you've been using it, is a search engine, and it's based around a much more similar algorithm or similar way of working to Google. So when we write, you know, blog posts and things like that, we're optimizing for keywords and SEO and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, when you create YouTube videos, you're really looking at stuff that, first of all, should have some more shelf life. It should be searchable, findable. I've got a video that's about 8 years old that's still getting watched now. It's like, it's not masses of views. It's like 10,000 views on it, but it's just trickling along and has been for sort of 7 or 8 years. None of my LinkedIn videos do that because they work for about a week in the feed, and you can sometimes get some really good engagement and stuff off of those videos, but then they're gone. So, you know, you need to approach those two things in different ways, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's the prime example is like the social media videos that I put out are generally short promo or like lead in type of videos. Whereas my YouTube videos are like, there's meat in those videos. The actual content is there. And the polar opposite is true of LinkedIn compared to social. The social videos do have a shelf life of a few weeks or a couple months, then they're gone. Maybe they'll get a view if somebody stumbles upon it, but not likely. Whereas on YouTube, most of my videos don't really pick up till a few months in. And then as soon as they start to get viewed, then I notice, like, I look at my analytics on my top couple videos and the numbers are like right about here. And then after a few months, if it catches on, it goes like this. And then sometimes five, 6 months or later, then it's like, whoop. It's like once YouTube is like, ooh, this is a good, helpful video. Yeah, people are starting to like this. I'm going to prioritize this. So it's very similar to SEO in the SEO world. But on that note, for web designers thinking about doing either training video, and I recognize that most of my audience are not going to do authoritative type of videos. They're going to be doing videos for clients, and they're probably going to focus more on the short videos, which should honestly take a lot of pressure off this. However, when it comes to social media videos, what's your stance on, like, should the meat of the content, is it worthwhile doing a 10 to 15 minute video on Facebook or Instagram? Or should the social media videos just be the bites just to get them interested to go to the video or to go to the website?
Yeah, I think the latter. You've got to remember that social media networks, as we were just talking about, are kind of places where you snack for content. So, you know, you check in for a few times a day and you're on it for a few minutes. So, you know, if you can capture someone's attention for a couple of minutes, then you're doing well. Asking people to watch 15 or 20 minutes on Facebook, for a start, on LinkedIn, it's capped at 10 minutes. So you can't even do more than 10 minutes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm.
So, you know, there are kind of, and Instagram is pretty short unless you're on IGTV. So, you know, they're kind of designed for short, bite-sized pieces of media. And I think you'll be more successful if you can maybe do what you've been doing, which is, you know, to take a snippet of an idea from a longer piece of content, or just a quick idea that people can kind of get a bit of action from, or just, you know, something actionable that people can use. If you can keep those kind of regular, and you know what you can, which is why you need to kind of approach the content creation process in a slightly different way. So if your audience is predominantly on Facebook or LinkedIn, for example, you might sit down to create 10 1-minute videos, and they're all individual kind of slices. Whereas if you're looking at YouTube, you might focus on a 10-minute video that doesn't necessarily carve up into 10 1-minute slices. And that's the slightly frustrating thing about, you know, trying to distribute your content across multiple channels, is it doesn't necessarily work just putting it on all different channels and hoping for the best. You've kind of got to optimize for specific channels. And, you know, I would say probably you go where your audience is to a certain extent to do that.
And the beauty about that too, though, is to repurpose and multi-purpose content. So what I'm looking to do with my podcast is, because it's video and audio, I do put the videos on YouTube, and they get a decent amount of views, although I get more through podcasting just because it's more long form audio. However, a lot of web designers do like watching it. Just have it on. I used to do that. I'd watch an interview on the background and design a website. However, the cool thing about that is you can take pieces from interviews or from a training and then repurpose that to a short video. And that's kind of one thing. We have a call next week to talk about some potential collaboration. That's one thing I'm going to ask you, just a heads up, is I'm looking for somebody to, like, take snippets out of videos and chop them up and then use for social media. And the same thing can be done for my web design audience. Is if you have a webinar that you do for clients, you could always take a 2 or 3 minute chunk, or even less, on one of the points that you go over, and that could be a little promo that you put on social media. Or, like you've seen, David, what I do now is, often once an episode releases of the podcast, I try to follow it up with a few different social media ideas. And instead of just the link to the post, I'll come in with a video typically and just say, here's a point, here's something really beneficial from this episode, check the full episode out here. And I find that will get people interested from snacking to go to it, but it's also a good reminder. Like, sometimes they might see the episode, they might get my email, but people are busy. They might forget a few days later. And then if I come in with a video a few days later, they're like, oh yeah, I meant to listen to that. What are some other benefits of those short bite-sized videos?
I think what you just said is really important. With social media, firstly, your audience is the exposure to your audience is limited. So if you've got 1,000 followers on Facebook, every time you post something, you're probably only going to be able to reach about 2 to 5% of those. So maybe 20 or 50 people are going to see that post, which is why you don't want to just post your entire podcast once, for example. You know, the idea is, as you were saying, to kind of, like, splice it up. Long form content is great because you get so many more options from it. Not everyone has a podcast or a live show or whatever that they can kind of take those bits out of. But if you have, then like you say, you can take probably 5, 6, or 7 clips out of a piece. And that gives you 5, 6, 7 different touch points that you can hit with that Facebook audience, for example. So, you know, you maybe reach 50 people with one post, you'll reach a different 50 people with the next post. And so now you're suddenly reaching a few hundred of your audience rather than just, you know, through one single post. So absolutely, if you can kind of slice it up into tiny pieces, then you can post it more regularly and across multiple platforms. We use a great bit of software called CoSchedule that allows allows you to do that, actually. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but...
The Elegant Themes content managers use that for posting certain blog articles across different Divi Facebook groups. Because I manage one group and they needed access as an admin to be able to use that for the group. So yeah, it's pretty sweet though, because you could do it through different channels and groups and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can set up a campaign, which is just, for me, genius. So you can kind of say, here's my piece of content. And then you've got a distribution kind of system set up, which says, send it out to this group, to that Facebook channel, to this Instagram account. And you literally just drop the account into and set go, and it pushes it out without having to do anything else. So yeah, we like that.
That's genius. Now, I'm curious, do you know, because Facebook will give you like the number of views on the bottom of a video, whether it's personal or business related, do you know how long somebody needs to be watching that for it to count as a view? Because for example, I experimented early on with my podcast with posting the podcast, you know, through the podcast player and on YouTube. And then I would follow up a few days later with the entire interview. I was just thinking, you know what, maybe Facebook will like me if I'm posting longer content. And it would get like a third of the views that it would on YouTube. But I have to wonder, were people really watching the entire interview, or was it for like a minute? Do you happen to know, like, how does Facebook track the views?
Formally, it's only 3 seconds. So a view is counted, and it's literally nothing. You know, it's like if you even just scrolled past it slowly, that would count as a view. So I think Facebook likes to kind of be generous with its kind of stats like that, because it, you know, makes it look like you're getting lots of kind of engagement from it. If you dig into your Facebook stats, certainly on paid campaigns, you can look at how much of the things people are watching, whether they're watching 10 seconds or 80% or whatever you want to look at. But you shouldn't be kind of put off by that. Possibly what's happening is that when with the longer piece is that people are what you tend to do when you look at any video is almost immediately look at how long it is, because it'll give you an idea about how much, whether you want to engage in it or not. So quite often, if I've put a video up that's like 45 seconds, it will do loads and loads of views, particularly on a platform like LinkedIn, which is kind of my platform. It'll do loads of views because when you look at it, you think like 45 seconds, I've got 45 seconds, I'll watch it. You know, if you see 8 minutes 50, you're like, ugh. And you move on, you know, and you say, I've got 8 minutes 50. I've got stuff to do. So yeah, you know, there's an advantage to that kind of that number being low in the corner there, you know?
Yeah. That's why I love doing podcasting so much, is because I'm just such a big fan of a good old long form talk. And some of my talks are an hour and a half or longer. So I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I don't have time for that. But thankfully, I think a lot of my audience appreciate the in-depth nature of a good long form talk. Cause I feel like anything super short, this is one reason I'm not against short videos with social media or anything like that, but even video, it's just so surfacey. Like you gotta have some time to really get into the meat of stuff, which is why I love podcasts and course videos and trainings. But it makes total sense, man, to keep an eye on that. And even, first of all, I'm definitely never going to post anything long form on social ever again. I don't use LinkedIn, so it's a whole new world to me. However, yeah. I will say for my audience who are working with businesses, I would absolutely capitalize on LinkedIn. Do you want to maybe give some tips for LinkedIn? Because again, it's out of my realm of knowledge or expertise, but I have heard that video is like killing it on LinkedIn, because it's fairly like, yeah, you can stand out on LinkedIn more so than anywhere else, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, absolutely, if you're in a kind of B2B environment or a more professional kind of circle, then, you know, if you're selling to businesses or professionals, even if you're not, to be honest, I mean, like, you know, business people are also people, you know, so, you know, even if you're selling products or something, you might find that LinkedIn is useful. The like all networks, it's got its own character. So, I mean, I find it a really nice place because the people there are positive. They're kind of looking out for each other. It's quite a kind of wholesome business community of people who are kind of cheering each other on, especially through, you know, sort of difficult times like we've had recently. You don't get many people talking about politics and religion and arguing about things like you do on some of the other social channels. So, you know, I like it from that respect. They only introduced video as a tool for, you know, to use in your profile about 2 years ago. So it's one of the last social networks to really introduce video. And when they first introduced it, like a lot of the other social networks did, like Facebook did, they basically gave away views. So it was really easy. I mean, I had a short 1 minute video that did 50,000 views one day, you know, and just in a week sort of thing. And so, you know, that was those were the kind of gold rush years. It's a little bit, they've kind of reined it in a little bit now as more and more people have come onto the platform to use video. But you still get some good engagement if you're consistent with it. And I would say that the kind of style of video needs to be short. Honestly, sometimes kind of entertaining and a little bit more fun, because it can be quite a dry platform, LinkedIn. And there's quite a few people there kind of giving pretty dry kind of business tips.
It feels very corporate. Like, I almost feel like I need to wear a suit to log into it. Like, it just feels a little stuffy.
Yeah. But oddly, if you look at the successful content now that people are producing on it, a lot of it's just a bit more fun, and it's trying to bring a little bit more kind of joy and a bit more life to kind of running your business. So, you know, if you can kind of bring a slightly lighter touch to your content on LinkedIn, I think you'll find it's probably more successful.
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. And I feel like the same is true for Insta or Facebook particularly too, like that stuff. Going back to what we talked about earlier, the different types of mediums are crucial for the different types of video you're going to do, because you can have a little more fun and keep it casual on Facebook, where I'm a casual dude anyway, but I'm not going to be super casual for course videos because people are paying to be there. So of course I want to give it my all and do that. And actually, another question I had for you, David, was length of any sort of training or tutorial videos. And of course, there's no right or wrong answer to this, because it just depends on the topic and stuff. However, what I've noticed on my YouTube channel is I have some longer videos that do really well. But what I've started to try to do is to keep like a Google Analytics basic training video, for example. I'm getting ready to redo the one I did, which it's my most popular video on my YouTube channel right now. I think it's up to almost, I think it's over 200,000 views, well over 200,000. Actually, it might be like 300,000 or 400,000. I forget. But in any case, I think that one's like 15 minutes-ish. And what I found is if I keep a video that between the 10 to 12 mark, that feels different than 15 to 20. Have you experienced that as far as like trying to keep the length of certain trainings down? Like somebody once said in a seminar I went 2 years ago, try to keep any sort of training videos you do under 12 minutes. There's something in the mind that seems to work well with that and recognize that versus a 20 minute. Now, 20 minute is still fine. That's what most of my course videos are. They're mostly 20 to 25. But I'm really encouraged to try to even cut things down or maybe split those into two modules to keep it like to 10 or 12 minute mark. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Are you talking about YouTube specifically?
Both. Any sort of training, whether it's a YouTube training video or walkthrough or a course or, you know, any sort of training video.
We see like an actual course, a video within a course, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sticking with YouTube, YouTube actually changed the way that it rewards people, I think a couple of years back. So it doesn't value the channel based on views anymore. It values it based on watch time. And so what's happened because of that, and I suppose it was intentional on YouTube's part, is that people have started to make longer form content. Because if you can get someone to your video and you can keep them there for 15 minutes, you've got a lot more watch time from that video than if you get them there and that your video is only 2 minutes long. So people are starting to make longer form content. And actually, similar to you, that I've got a video on my channel, which is just I did a presentation for a tourism seminar, and I filmed it. But it's like 25 minutes, I think. And I just filmed it and put it up on YouTube. And that's been one of my most successful videos over a lot of the other videos that are just 2 or 3 minutes long. So, but then I suppose what you've got to remember with YouTube is that people are going there with intent. So they're like, you know, show me tourism marketing techniques, and they want to learn about it. So when they find the video, they're going to be happy to sit in front of it for like 15, 20, 25 minutes. As long as the content's good and it's densely packed, then they'll stick with it. And that'll actually be really good for your YouTube channel as well. So in terms of in a course, I mean, you know, I suppose you're thinking more about concentration span there. Maybe if you could break it into sort of 8 or 10 minute chunks, then that might be better for concentration. I suppose that depends on the structure of the course to a certain extent.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I was just looking at my analytics on my Google Analytics video, which is the most popular on my channel. That one's 15 minutes and 44 seconds, which I feel like that's kind of a good happy medium. It's a little more than your fairly brief 8 to 10 minute training, but it's not up there. It's a little more dense. It's not up there with like a 20 to 30 minute video. However, I have some colleagues who have hour, 2 hour, 3 hour big training, how to build a website video. And those do fine because they're kind of like a mini course on YouTube. Yeah. And that's kind of my selfishly, I wanted to ask you that because I'm kind of thinking through how I'm going to do content on YouTube moving forward. And what I'm thinking about and exploring is potentially doing a few different variations, like maybe have a 10 minute video that is more of an introduction lead in. And if they like that, then they can check this other video out that takes it to the next level. And then I'm going to be doing some longer videos with how to build websites with Divi or certain tools that are going to be different from my courses, but are still going to be really good entry points. But those are probably going to be like an hour or 2 hours. So
what you're talking about there is essentially a funnel. So, you know, and I think, you know, all marketing needs to be kind of arranged into some kind of order so that you know really what the objective of the marketing is. So, you know, if you're, I mean, and James Franco, who we're talking about at the beginning, talks about the octopus or it's a chocolate wheel and then there's some kind of octopus, whatever it is. He's got an analogy for it. But if you look at your octopus tentacles as being, you know, the small social media pieces that feed back to maybe a 10-minute YouTube video that then feeds on to an hour-long sort of in-depth piece of content that you maybe subscribe for or whatever it is, you're looking at how that content moves you from an introductory place into a kind of a warmer relationship. And that, you know, if you're strategic with all of your content, then it should be doing that. You should be looking at how that works.
Yeah, and I think that's a great thought for my audience of web designers. Like, if you're going to do video, you probably don't want to post an hour-long training on your Facebook because clients are not going to be interested in that. What they might be interested in is one little nugget, a breadcrumb to get them to pique their interest. Or like, here's one quick tip on boosting your SEO. You know, do this and you'll see a big change. And then they're like, oh, that was really helpful. I'd like a little more. Then that's when then maybe the 10-minute video comes in next. And then you have a lead in or a lead gen for like a webinar, a half an hour, 45-minute training. Yeah. And then that's when they're like really interested. They've gained a lot and then they're going to move forward. And I just found this as a practical example. I was invited on to a recent summit that one of my design colleagues put on. And I did a 45-minute training in that, and that brought in a ton of students to the course. And all I did was I took content from the course and I just repurposed it and just talked about some of the basics in this training. And it funneled in a bunch of people because they got some breadcrumbs. They got enough, and then they wanted more. They wanted the full thing. And I like that idea of the breadcrumbs analogy because one of my students, she was an avid follower of mine on YouTube for years. Because for your reference, David, I built my YouTube channel up first before I did courses. So I just posted a bunch of tutorials on web stuff and Divi and business of web design and all this kind of stuff. And she followed all my tutorials. And then when I released my course on Divi and CSS, she bought that. And I kind of asked her, what was the difference? Like, you had, you know, watched all my tutorials. Why did you join my course? And she said, your videos were great. They were like the breadcrumbs, though. I still had so many pieces that I needed to fill in. And she's like, it wasn't until I went through your whole Divi CSS course that I got the full meal. It was like a point A to point B, start to finish. And it's just a primary example of how the short, whether it's short video videos on YouTube, or excuse me, on socials, or if it's like little more in-depth videos on YouTube, those are still some sort of funnel to something bigger, typically, unless your business is on YouTube. But again, just like any other platform, it's vulnerable if that's where your content lives because you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's useful to remember as well, you know, that there are you need to have multiple touch points in any relationship. So, you know, there is a danger or a tendency to want to do your top tip for Facebook in your 1 minute video and then at the end of it go, now buy my stuff, you know, for like, now buy my £5,000 service, you know, and it's like there's too much of a jump there from that to that. Whereas if you look at literally just offering something a bit more in the next step, that's your call to action. And it's not a big step to take for the person who doesn't necessarily know you. And then at the end of that one, you can put them onto a next step. So you've literally maybe got a 4 or 5 or 6 step kind of pathway into your world, your little kind of, you know, whatever you're offering. So,
yep, you know, that's actually the biggest thing that I'm planning out right now and working on is like different levels of free training and funnels to, because a lot of my courses are $297. My business course is $500. It's $497. So yeah, very rarely I'm not going to post something quick on social media and then somebody be like, oh yes, I'm ready to drop $500 on that course. No, and that's the power of podcasting and this other content is it builds that trust. Now, the idea of this for clients, web design clients, this is even more important because if a web design client is going to pay on average $2,000 to $3,000 or $4,000 or more, a quick little minute Facebook video is probably not going to convert a $5,000 sale, but it will open the gate to the next level of knowledge that a client might be interested in if you're going that route. And I actually, on a level that's more practical, not in the video digital world, I experienced this with my networking group. I was in a business to business networking group and I didn't get those $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 jobs initially. I did get some pretty early on, but I built a relationship with the people in that group. And what we would do is rotate doing presentations. And that's what gave me confidence to do video too. I was like, I can do a presentation for 10 people. I can make a freaking video out of this and do it. But I say that to say it was the same idea. Like I gave them knowledge. They got to know me every week. The same thing would apply with video, whether it's social media or whatever. And then when I did those presentations, they saw that I was competent and that I knew my craft and I cared about them. And then they were like, okay, now I'm interested in doing this for my website. Let's move forward with this $3,000 redesign or something. So yeah, that's a great key.
Possibly a great first video to make as well. If you are doing presentations like that for small groups of people and you can put a camera in the room, then you know you're already in that place where you're kind of having to push yourself into that space. So putting a camera in actually doesn't make it any harder. It's just and then you're grabbing that content and you can use that content.
And you know what I did, man? After particularly, I did one presentation. I think it was when I did a presentation on Google Analytics for my clients. What I did was I was creating these resources for my clients on my client resources page. Right when I got home after doing that presentation, I recorded the screencast video. Same presentation, but I was already in that headspace. I was already in that frame of mind, and I knew the presentation so well because I had just done it and I'd prepared for it. So I knocked that video out like that. So that's just another strategy you can do is if you are in a chamber of commerce or something, yeah, you could, if you have some sort of presentation, either record that and repurpose it or do a different version of it that's tighter and is just, you know, you're going to be in that that headspace and that frame of mind. So that's always a strategy as well.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
Yeah. Well, man, David, this has been great. We've covered some great stuff. So we talked about, you know, why video is important. I think it's pretty clear. It just builds that likability and trust and it can lead to so many great things. We talked about some basic ways to get going with it, which is, I mean, I think the biggest key to that is just consistency, doing it over and over, getting out of your comfort zone. The really cool thing is you don't need that much tech these days. You don't need a super expensive camera. You could do a lot with a smartphone, but the next step up is to get a webcam. Lighting. I mean, I have a little more of a fancy setup now, but it's not terribly fancy. It's all Amazon stuff. I got a ring light over here, a side light over here. This is a mic bundle. So you don't need that much. And most people can just use a Blue Yeti or something like that as far as a mic. But we talked about the different types of video, which again, I kind of laid out what most web designers are doing and hopefully they can utilize this for short videos for social, maybe a little more for YouTube, but then really longer, more polished videos for like trainings. But we talked about some great stuff here, man. I'd love to wrap up with, if you have any sort of, apart from like gear that we talked about, any resources or tools that might be good for video. I know I use Loom for recording quick videos for my students now, but then also for client stuff. And then I personally use ScreenFlow for Mac for editing all my videos. But again, as I told you before we went live, I don't consider myself a video editor by any means. I can get by with it. But what are some decent tools maybe on the starting point and then for the next level up for people who are really interested in doing more video?
So I suppose if you're going to talk about editing tools, then I mean, there's quite a few now out there. I tend to prefer the software based ones rather than the kind of browser based ones because they tend to be a bit more stable. Camtasia is very popular. I think you can get that across Mac and PC. More recently, I've been recommending Adobe Rush, which is a really simple version of Adobe Premiere. So it's got all of the connections through to the kind of Adobe world. You can pull in various different kind of graphics from their libraries and sort of motion animations and all that kind of stuff. But it's just dead simple. It hasn't got the thousands of different buttons that Premiere has. You literally drop a few clips onto Timeline, and you can, I've got a tutorial for that actually, which I can make available for your audience.
Yeah, you can want. You send that? Make that available to my audience, and I'm totally going to watch that because I still use ScreenFlow for Mac, which is really just a screen recording. It's not really built specifically for editing. I mean, I do it that way, but there are some times where it times out or lags and I have to reopen it, and particularly for these longer interviews that are like an hour and a half. So yeah, I was interested in Premiere though. I did look at it and I was like, I don't have the bandwidth right now to learn that. So
it's a steep learning curve. Yeah. It's
I'm interested in
effects or something. You know, it's those bits of software have been around for so long. They've had so many new bits added into them every year when they try and re-release them that they're a mountain to climb. But Rush is really simple. It's all stripped back and it's designed exactly for social media content and for people who are just kind of dabbling.
Is it comparable to like an iMovie as far as,
kind of, you know, yeah, I would say it's easier to use than iMovie. iMovie is a bit clunky, but it's subscription based. I think it's about $9 a month or something. It's not expensive, and it's you get good results, and it's stable as well. And I think that makes a big difference particularly when you're doing a lot of work. You don't want stuff crashing on you and falling over and stuff. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Well, and good call as well with the app video stuff versus the stable stuff, because I've had problems with Loom in the past with it. Just like I would do a 10-minute video and then it would be buffering and it just wouldn't stop buffer. Like it just wouldn't, finish the video. It wouldn't it wouldn't optimize it or process it or whatever. So I still recommend Loom, but only for short videos. I always tell my students, if you're going to do a training video for clients or something that's going to be more than 10 minutes, I would probably do a Camtasia or a ScreenFlow or something like that. But yeah, I'm going to check that Rush out, man. That sounds great.
That's
good. So yeah. Well, David, thanks so much for your time, man. This has been a really cool chat. Hopefully this is beneficial for all my students and hopefully just give them some confidence just to get going. I loved what you said about particularly just going for it and then having these different channels of like, do some experimentation, maybe send it to your trusted colleagues, get some constructive criticism. Don't put it on a 20,000 person Facebook group that's going to rip you to shreds. You know, talk to some people who can give you some good constructive feedback and then go from there. And again, I'm eventually going to post some videos, I think, from like a few years back, because again, I have one on my business site where I did one of my first presentations for clients, and I'm like swinging in my chair, which is just a big no-no. I'm nervous. Just kind of like a no personality, just very, you could tell I was just intimidated by just the light in front of me. So you can come a long way just by going for it.
And absolutely.
And just letting your personality come through. I think that's huge too. Just be you. Don't.
Yeah, and that takes a while as well. I mean, because you do feel a little bit like you have to be professional and you have to kind of, maybe rein in some of your kind of idiosyncrasies. But, the more character you can let out within reason, the more you're going to connect to the right audience for you. And if you can, and that's we're moving into kind of personal branding now, I suppose. But, if there's three people in a room and you connect more personally with one of them, you're going to have a better working relationship. So if you can actually reveal your personality, you're going to attract people who are, a better fit for you as well.
Well, and that's a big point when it comes to getting clients, because one big quote I just love that I heard a while back that has resonated with me is that your vibe attracts your tribe. And so this is obviously huge for me as somebody who is a coach and a mentor now, because I'm bringing in students who like my personality and want to have the type of life that I'm living with the freedom of web design. But the same can be true for client work. Like if you have clients that see your video and they resonate with you, it really can bring in some quality people who maybe are not just like you, but there's similarities there. They feel like, okay, this is somebody I could work with and I trust. So I think that's huge for that as well, man.
We've had, you've just reminded me of a thing which I sometimes tell, which is maybe just before we wrap up, just kind of fitting in at the end here. So as a video production company, we quite often get invitations to tender. So, it'll be a marketing agent who's sent out to look for some video companies for a project. They'll come and they'll dial us up on Google. They'll say, look, we need this. And can you just send us a proposal? And, and that's that. And those kind of jobs are always really tricky because the client isn't really looking at your website. They're not really paying much attention to who you are. They don't know who you are. And then they literally just look at the bottom line usually once you send through your proposal. Some of the most loyal and kind of the best clients that we've worked through, we've worked with, have come through the social media content that we've created, because you've already started the relationship before you even really speak to the client. The client has been watching you. They've got to know you. They understand who you are. And very often those clients, they just want to work with us. They're not really interested in working with anyone else. They'll come to me and say, like, we want to work with you. And, you know, what do we do next? And it's not really a question of budget. It's not even really a question of like competition and who else you're trying to kind of be out of that particular equation. It's just, the relationship's already started. And I think that's one of the really powerful things about good video marketing content.
Yeah, because it really, even if you just have a video on your website overviewing your services or your process, they can get to know you before they even meet you. That was one thing that I found super powerful. When I put videos on my website, which previous to, you know, launching joshhall.co, I had videos for a couple of my internal pages for clients, whether it was like onboarding them or offboarding them. And then that went over so well, I was like, you know what, I'm going to make a video for like my maintenance plan, because they can read the page. But what would it be even better is if I had a video just overviewing the page. So I did that, and I had some videos elsewhere on the site. And that really went such a long way, because they would reach out, and it, first of all, it saved me time because it answered all the questions they had. And they already, it kind of turned them from a cold lead to a really warm lead, or in some cases a hot lead, because they already felt like, I seems like he knows his craft. I like this guy. I trust them. And then, yeah, I'm about ready to move forward. Just have some final questions. Yeah. And particularly when it comes to proposals, wow. Talk about a way to convert, you know, boost your conversions. Put a little video on there just outlining the proposal. It'll answer so many questions. And it also shows that you care enough to send them a quick video with it, which most web designers are not going to be doing more than one proposal a week or something like that. So there's no reason you couldn't do a 5-minute video with it. So yeah, man. Awesome, Dave. Well, man, it's been some great stuff. We're going to have everything outlined and transcribed for us here when this episode gets out there. Do you have like a, maybe just like a final thought for anyone who's thought about doing video, but they're still, they need like a push? What would you encourage them with just to get going with trying some video out?
It's really just to make a start, but I suppose think about, so when you're creating video, you're essentially scaling yourself. So you're able to then, you know, use that video for, you know, to grow yourself. So like, especially if there's just one of you, you can appear in more places and at once without having to actually be in those places at once. So think about the last time somebody asked you a question that you felt like, oh my God, I'm always repeating this to my clients. Something that you keep saying over and over and over again, make a video about that. And then the next time somebody asks you that question, instead of having to spend 10 minutes on the phone to them explaining it to them, you can just send them the video. You don't even have to put it up online. You can have it hosted privately somewhere. And that has saved you 10 minutes. And if you can do that and start to build that library of content, after a while, you're going to be saving yourself a stack of time.
Oh, you're speaking my language, man. I talk about that. I actually show what I do in my business course, because I have the same thing. I found myself repeating myself on the onboarding phase over and over. So I was like, I'm just going to make a video. Like, we use Basecamp for project management, and my clients inevitably had questions on, well, what do I need to do? What's it going to be like? And I just made a video like, here's how we have it set up. Here's where you can put your stuff. And it's part of my process now. Just that little video, saves so much time. So awesome, man. Well, David, thanks so much for the time. I don't think this will be the last time I have you on the podcast, because this was some great stuff.
Great. It's been great to talk to you, Josh. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Cheers, man.
Hey guys and gals, just wanted to pop in with a couple things before you head out. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. I would love to hear your feedback, and it will also help other web designers find the show. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode. Just go to joshhall.co, click on podcasts, and search this episode number, and you'll find all the links, descriptions, and resources we talked about. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe, and you'll be notified when the next episode is live. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll catch you guys on the next episode.